Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Combox Live, where the game lives on. It never dies. It is immortal. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me is my colleague Estelle Vasudevan, who you can find at Estelle_Vasu, the number one. Estelle, the T20 World Cup has kicked off, three games on day one. And we're going to obviously speak about all three of them. It's a full-on review. What a wild, wild day of cricket. Conventional wisdom seemed to have taken the back door. We got all three expected results with Pakistan, the West Indies and India winning. But at times in each three of those games, you felt like the associate nation had a chance?
Yeah, it was almost a perfect kind of day for a neutral fan. Except that, as you said, the results didn't, you know, were the expected ones. I mean, what's a World Cup day without Pakistan almost losing to an associate team, right? I mean, it was actually a fun day of cricket, wasn't it? Like, I mean, you get all this criticism about associate countries and how, you know, games are not competitive. And if you look at the result, probably people might still, like, if you didn't watch the game, people might say that. But the games were much closer than the results would suggest, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, it was a perfect advert for the T20 World Cup because all three games had their moments. I feel like Pakistan was the likeliest of the full nominations who could have lost today. And that was just a weirdly wild game. But where do you want to start? We're going to discuss all three games. Do you want to go India first or Pakistan?
Let's go India.
All right. Well, India are the defending champs. They are the home team as well this time around. And they have a scary good unit. Probably one of the best teams to have ever been assembled in T20s altogether. And they are hot favourites as well. But in the middle over there, they were what, 6 down for 77? The USA gave India a proper scare on what was a weird sort of pitch. There was turn, there was a bit of bounce. Sometimes the ball was kind of getting stuck. And Jared was quite vocal in our group chats saying that you can't play away from your body on this sort of surface. You have to play underneath your eye line. And that's the mistake that batters kept making. What was your assessment?
No, see, that's the funny thing, right? Like, I'm coming into this podcast after a press conference with the Sri Lanka captain, Dasun Shanaka, where he was very vocal about how bad the pitches in Sri Lanka have been. And he did, in fact, mention, like, you look at the India team, they're playing so well, but look at the pitches they get. Small boundaries, flat tracks. And then you come to this game, and the ball's not coming on. I do think, like, I caught a little bit of the post-match where Sky was saying that, like, you know, his assessment suggested that it would be like a 140 type track, right? So very strange. I think unexpected, you would certainly say, right?
I'm not sure if he was confident that it was a 140 type track. I know he said that, but it was ultimately that sort of surface. I think that the USA weren't quite aware of how these conditions would play out. And of course, associate teams often would like to field first anyway. They don't want to bat first, not be able to put up a total and then watch the game crumble in front of their eyes. But I mean, India were definitely tested on this Wankhede surface. It was rather odd. I don't understand why the curators went with it, because if you are kind of making the conditions for batting a bit tough, then you are bringing the weaker team into the game, which is odd given that India is the host nation as well. And I mean, who expected that the USA would only lose to India by 29 runs? I feel like that's a moral victory for them. And for India, perhaps this was a good wake-up call that perhaps, like, they might not always get those flat decks. And they are generally a really, really good team in whatever conditions they play, and their record speaks for itself. But this was quite a fascinating game. And I feel like, you know, had the USA caught their catches, because they dropped like three. Right? And that's a lot of dropped catches. Like, Tilak was dropped on 22 by Wan Schalkwyk, but he got out right after. Ishan Kishan was dropped on 10 as well, but he got right after. But Sky, he was dropped by Shubham Ranjane when he was on 15. And Sky is the difference between both teams at the end. So that was a really, really costly drop for the USA, who started to, you know, make errors in the field as well. Some misfields, this, that, the other. And you expect that from associate nations. But you cannot have that many slip-ups versus India, even on their off day. They've proven that time and again.
Yeah, you can't have a single slip-up, right? Anyone you ask or anyone you talk about who knows anything about how the game's gone knows that India is the team to beat. And more or less, you know, to find a weakness is very difficult. So when they do give you opportunities, you have to take them, right? Like, whether you're associate nation or not. I understand, like, the standards might be slightly lower, but when it comes to fielding, like, something that I always think is that it's the one thing you have complete control over, right? As a team, it's the one of the three skills. It's the one thing that you have complete control over. You can be a great bowler and come up against like the way Sky played today, right? Mm. Or you can be a great batter but get some really great deliveries and be dismissed. But as a fielder, like how many things from the other team actually impact, you know, your performance, right? So that is something that I'm sure they'll be disappointed with as well. But India, I mean, I've got to say, at 77 for six, you still, I mean, for me, it was still like never in doubt, right? They would have defended probably 120 or 110 even. So it's just that kind of the team they've built, it's very difficult to see them losing.
Yeah, I mean, they are as close to invincible as it gets in this format. And we saw in the Asia Cup, India didn't even play their best cricket and they won that tournament undefeated. And this was an associate nation. Lots of, you know, Indians or people of Indian origin who are playing for the USA, for them, it might be a bit of a homecoming. But I'm really impressed by the way the USA fought over here. I agree with you that there was an element of, you know, it's still India. They'll manage to find a way to win when they were six down for 77. But I was thinking to myself that they probably have to, you know, the USA probably have to restrict India around 130 to 140, maximum 145. Maybe 145 was a bit too much actually for them. That's where they could potentially have a chance because the wicket was tacky indeed. And it did bring them into the game. But of course, you know, there's a lack of experience when it comes to the USA. There is an obvious lack of quality. And then India are India. They don't rely on the toss. They don't rely on the conditions. Most, you know, games that they play against all opponents, they are mostly the favorites. So nothing was different over here. But at least, you know, we got a fantastic start to the T20 World Cup. And I mean, the broadcasters will be happy. They haven't been too happy lately, have they?
Yeah, and see, like, I think, I don't know, I'm speaking for myself, I guess, when I say that, like, you'd rather see India tested and win, like, even if you're an India fan, rather than, like, see, like, a 250-plus score, right? And USA being bundled out for something really cheap. So I think it was a really good start for them as well, because you don't want to get complacent, right, at the end of the day, no matter how good you are. So great start. I think it'll make them focus on, you know, some of the other stuff that they need to look at. Like you said, things are not always going to go their way, right? And they're going to have games where the top order fails or you're going to need someone in the middle order to kick on and stuff like that. So it was good to see from India. But again, like I said, like to me, it's almost like a certainty that someone's going to step up and someone's going to find a way because that's 11 match winners, right, in that side.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think there is some novelty in what you're trying to say is that, you know, you are better off when you're tested in these sort of group games and that kind of battle hardens you for, you know, future games in the same tournament. And I mean, both India and Pakistan, they benefit from poor fielding, right? Like two drop catches in both those games. And in this one, if Sky was caught for 15, who's to say what would have happened, right? Because no one else really clicks. And Sky scores more than 50% of his team's runs. India end up with what, 161 for 8? In their 20 overs? Yeah. And Surya Kumar Yadav, he was unbeaten on 84 of 49. And his 50 came off, what, 36 deliveries? And then he just goes berserk later, accelerating like crazy. I think he pitches 21 runs off the last over of Netravalkar. Yeah. And Netravalkar goes for 65 runs, wicketless in his four overs. So not a very good first outing for him in this T20 World Cup as compared to the last one. But Sky really was the difference between both teams. And he's really come into form at the perfect time for India. He's the captain as well. Played a captain's knock. It was a top effort because his team was under pressure. The wicket wasn't a straightforward one. But this is his happy hunting ground. He is a Mumbai Indian. And this is where he plays all of his IPL cricket.
Yeah, the numbers are like 84 of 49 for Sky and 77 of 71 for everybody else, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, that shows what a massive impact he had on that innings and, you know, at the end of the day, got the job done for India. Just that, you know, I think there is also an element when you look at a lot of associate nations and probably lower-ranked countries as well, is that sometimes you get like great performances in patches, but like a complete performance is very difficult to see. You'd often see like, and I will categorize even Sri Lanka into this, right? Where you did have like a higher ranked team under pressure, but to finish things off, that's where it takes that that's where your experience, your quality, all of that comes into play. And for a team like India, when you have 11 players who are at that level, you know that even if one doesn't perform, you've got another opportunity. Whereas for teams like USA, like if you look at their batting, probably they needed their openers to like put on a really good score in that power play, right? Like you're almost dependent on two or three different players. Whereas for a team of India's quality, that's not the case.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I hear you. And Andres Hoos was probably the USA's best batter now that Aaron Jones is kind of caught for corruption and some things have gone down over there as well. But this wasn't a full strength India either. Like, obviously, any Indian team would be far too superior for an associate nation. But Jasprit Bumrah is still Jasprit Bumrah. He was sick, I reckon. Wasn't fit to play this game. Harshit Rana has been ruled out of the tournament because he's gotten injured or picked up an injury in a warm-up game, I believe. So Mohammad Siraj came out of nowhere. Started in the first game of the T20 World Cup as well. They also played Arshdeep ahead of Kuldeep. So they either play one of those two. And I think Arshdeep was probably the right call over here. Because even when India finished with 161 for 8 in their 20 overs, you're thinking, all right, you know what? Game's almost done. Like 95% done. But perhaps if the USA have a good power play, they could dare to dream. And Arshdeep and Siraj completely killed that dream. They obliterate that dream. USA were, what, 3 down for 13? And Siraj, 2 for 18 in 3 power play overs, ends with, 3 for 29? He was brilliant. Arshdeep gave away nothing in the first two power play overs. I reckon his figures were 1 for 2 in his first two power play overs. But then in his 3 power play overs, he was 1 for 11. And he ends with 2 for 18 overall. I feel like those guys between them completely wrecked the USA. And whatever semblance of chance was left was over. And then the spinners, we knew they were going to come to the party given the sort of surface this was. I mean, 1 for 24 for Varun and 2 for 24 for Akshar. They take 3 for 48 between them in 8 overs. The only bowler who struggled for India was Hardik Pandya, and that's fine because they didn't even need him. And this bowling attack is going to be potent even without Bumrah. But if it's a better, you know, team out there, a full member nation who could challenge India, perhaps that could be something, you know, that could be an Achilles heel. But then again, Bumrah would play those games.
Yeah, I mean, and you can't, it's not that because they had a collapse in this game, they're going to have one in every game, right? Like, it's going to be different in games to come. But as you said, chasing that total, the power play was going to be really important given the fact that, you know Chakravarti is going to come into the game later on and Akshar Patel is going to come into the game later on, given the pitch, right? So they really needed to get the first 6 overs right. And that didn't happen. And once that didn't happen, it was always, I think, more of, you know, getting to a respectable total. I think they batted well, actually, to get to that total. They didn't look, I mean, they kind of looked unfazed until those 2 wickets in Akshar Patel's over. It was almost like there is an outside chance of chasing this down, right? But, like, I think for a lot of these lower-ranked teams, the first 6 overs, the power play is going to be very important in both innings. And if they get that right, they might stand a chance.
Yeah, I mean, India's weakest phase during the bowling innings is surprisingly the power play. So they had to cash in over there. Otherwise, this was a lost cause. It was already a lost cause after Sky's unbeaten 84 of 49. And I mean, it's amazing how that's just one batter who clicks for India and that's all they needed. Abhishek Sharma, Golden Duck, not an issue. Everyone else fails, not an issue. But there were some USA players with the ball who really surprised everyone and they've probably, you know, won some fans. I mean, Shadley Van Schalkwyk. Firstly, what a name, right? He's a pretty good-looking dude as well. I'm sure you'll agree over there. And he dismisses Ishan Kishan, Tilak Varma and Dubey in his second over. 3 big wickets and yeah, his change of pace or pace off deliveries were fantastic. Ended up with 3 for 10 in 2 power play overs and 4 for 25 overall. I feel like he's definitely made a mark. And then the spinners were also really good. Harmeet Singh, 2 for 26. It's almost as if you are a finger spinner playing in India and your name starts with the word harm, you're going to do well. Harmeet has proven that theory. And Mohammad Mohsin, the wrist spinner, 1 for 16 and 4 overs for him. I had food with this guy at a wedding like in late December. And I was like, what the hell are you doing over here taking Rinku Singh's wicket? So it's a weird life. But I feel like the USA can take a lot of heart from this performance. And they kind of do. Like, sure, they drop the catches and, you know, that's them wrecking their own chances. But Ali Khan bowled a brilliant power play spell. 1 for 13 in 2 power play overs. And then he goes out injured because his knee gets stuck in the field whilst he's fielding. that was a big blow because he was the experienced campaigner and their senior death bowler. Losing him was only going to, you know, set them up for failure, even though success was so unlikely.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, up until that last over that went for 21, it's still a pretty good bowling performance, right? Like, if you look at it from, like, before the game, you know, I think, was it Dale Steyn tweeting that the first 300 was going to be achieved or something like that? So, like, yeah, the expectation was that it would be a big total. Yes, the pitch was, I mean, obviously not conducive to that kind of total. But if you look at the way the USA went about things, I think in terms of the bowling and the bowling plans, like the field they set for Abhishek Sharma, you know, stuff like that.
True.
There was a lot of thought given to it and they were able to kind of stick to those plans. That's important, right? Like you can have all the strategies under the sun. If you don't have the ability to execute, then it's pointless. But the way they went about things, there's a lot of promise in that, you know, they were able to kind of really stick to those plans. And I know warm-up games aren't, you know, they don't mean much, but they did push New Zealand as well, right? So if they can get things right in this group, right, in the other games, and don't concede like what they did to Sky. And there you have to give credit to Sky, the way he batted, right?
You do.
So, I mean, they can be really competitive. I think, you know, given that if Pakistan do go ahead with boycotting the game against India, that gives everyone else an opportunity, doesn't it?
I mean, there is another way to look at this, that India is so strong that Pakistan would probably lose anyway. But yes, based on the net run rate hit, that would potentially, you know, be a part of that forfeit that Pakistan could or could not do. We still don't know or have any confirmation around this because the government of Pakistan has given the directive that they won't play. But we've been hearing pretty solid, you know, rumors or from pretty solid sources that there are back channel talks going on. But anyway, that's a discussion for another day. Mm-hmm. I do feel like you make a solid point. USA's plans were perfect. Their fields were really good. Their fielding let them down and some poor luck as well with Ali Khan going out to injury. And realistically, as you said, even if India scored a low total, there was always like this sort of feeling that they will defend that total. And USA do well to get to whatever, 132 in the end because they didn't bat all too poorly. But, you know, India were reduced to 46 for 4 in the power play. And then 63 for 4 in the first 10 overs. They go boom after that. And that's almost only Sky anyway. So they should take a lot of heart, the USA, from this performance. And as you said, they had to do well in their power play, right? And they were, what, 31 for 3 at the end of it. The game was done in the first couple of overs. Or you could say even after the first innings. Because 161 for 2, or sorry, 161 for 8 was far too many runs for the USA to chase, and that was always my opinion. So, congratulations to Indian fans on winning their first game at the Wankhede Stadium. But let's be honest, we all thought that the margin would be more like 129 runs, and it ultimately turned out to be 29 runs. So I feel like as we started this podcast, we said that this was a great advert for T20 cricket. As well as the associates do, that notion gets stronger because we want this to be a super competitive tournament. And I'm so happy, Estelle, that this is not one of those other T20 World Cups of yesteryear where first there's this preliminary round that people are like half interested in. At least now, you know, we've started from the get-go. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Because that just, why not just have qualifiers then, right? If you want to have a preliminary round. It's just a waste of everyone's time.
Yeah, I agree. Anyway, I think that wraps up the India game review. And we have two other games to review as well. But before that, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are on Combox Live with Behram and Estelle. Go nowhere because we've still got West Indies, Pakistan, Netherlands and Scotland to talk about.
I have travelled the cricketing world, and so I've collected two things. The phone numbers of random taxi drivers and overseas SIM cards. Rideshare apps have fixed the first part, and Sally is doing the second. Now, all you need is their eSIM on whatever plan works for you. You activate it, and you can use it anywhere in the cricketing world. It helps you save money. It is a global solution to a global problem. Stop fiddling with tiny SIMs and get the one that does it all. Go to Sally.com Good Areas and use the code Good Areas to get an exclusive 15% off your first purchase. Fly free with Sally.
Welcome back to Combox Live. You guys are with Behram and Estelle, and we are currently reviewing day one of the T20 World Cup, all three games. The India game review is over, so if you're just joining us and want to listen in on that, you can go, you know, listen to the first segment. let's come to the West Indies because I feel like we need to keep Pakistan till the end. Otherwise, we're going to lose all our viewers, right? let's save the most entertaining game of the day for the end. The West Indies also looked shaky in their game versus Scotland. Of course, they first lost the toss. Richie Barrington elected to field. And I feel like you're going to see that theme throughout all associate teams. They're going to give them a chance to perhaps bowl out the opposition team cheaply and then chase those runs. It's the same thing that Monark Patel did. And Richie Barrington did the same. And I don't know if you caught the start of this game, Estelle, but the West Indies were sluggish as fuck. In the power play, they were 33 for no loss. At the 10-over mark, they were 66 for 2. Then, you know, they start accelerating. Hetmyer goes crazy. They were 138 for 2 at the end of 15 overs and ultimately ended up with 182 for 5 in 20 overs, which again wasn't entirely outside of Scotland's wheelhouse. But then again, I feel like, you know, when you're an associate nation chasing 180 plus in one of these games, it could prove to be a tad too much because you don't rely on quality through and through. You're relying on a few players to really come through, and that doesn't quite happen for Scotland.
Yeah, that's true. But I think just the fact that West Indies don't have the greatest bowling attack on earth is kind of something that would have still given them confidence that even 180 is chaseable. And it wasn't a bad pitch, right? It was certainly wasn't like the India game. So
not at all.
I think Scotland would have fancied their chances. But also, did you catch the Hetmyer like thing? He wasn't available or he wasn't present for the photo shoot and nobody knew where he was.
I reckon Shimron has always probably missed a flight, right? Because we've been there before.
I know, it's so classic, right? Like he's not there and ICC put the caption like not present for whatever. And then he turns up in the first game and plays this like match winning knock.
Yeah, I mean, it is very, very on brand with Shimron Hetmyer. To me, you know what he reminds me of? He looks to me like a left-handed Umar Akmal. Even the stroke making is similar and they've got similar faces. And I know I might be slandered for this take on the comments or in the comments. But what a knock by him. 22 ball half century batting at number 3 after the West Indies have started quite sluggishly. This was, in fact, the fastest 50 by a West Indian batter in the T20 World Cup, which I was really surprised by because we've seen some legends come out from the Caribbean nations. And you could say that he got lucky on occasion. I think twice the ball landed in no man's land. But that's the nature of the beast. That's T20 cricket for you. And he does slow down towards the end. So if he gets to his 15-22 balls, right, he ends up with 64 of 36. But it didn't quite matter because he had given West Indies the boost that they needed at the right time. And he took a splendid catch later on as well. So we know that he's this X-factor player. I love myself a left-hander anyway. And he did kind of take that target outside of Scotland's reach. Even though I agree with you, the West Indies bowling isn't at that level. But I feel like had Scotland restricted them to 160 or something, they could have very well won this game.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of ifs and buts, but I think you make a good point early on in that when it comes to like associate teams, you're not going to see like, so if you want 180 chase, you have a couple of players you have your eye on, right? Who need to get runs. It's not going to be like anyone gets going there chasing that down. So I think that was what worked in the West Indies' favor. In that, you know you got to get these particular players out and then you're okay. From Hetmyer's point of view, it's crazy, right? When you watch a player like that. And I saw a couple of posts even about Nicholas Puran, right? Who's not in international cricket anymore. Yeah. It's such a pity because these are the kind of guys who, they just have something different, right? Like when they get going, they can do something quite special. And I think Hetmyer's that type of player as well. I don't think I know enough to comment on his like disciplinary stuff, right? Obviously he's had like issues in the past and here too. We don't know exactly what happened and why he was not with the team at that point. But like when you see players perform like this, it's difficult to kind of say that maybe, the disciplinary issues should have an impact on whether he plays or not and stuff like that, because they offer something different, right?
Yeah, I mean, he is a very, very explosive power hitter, very dynamic batter, can take down pace and spin. And the way he was just going for that full swing of the blade and connecting those balls and smashing sixes for fun. Sure, he might have gotten lucky on a couple of occasions with the ball falling in no man's land. But that's, again, part and parcel of the gig. And I feel like, you know, T20 cricket, at least in the modern era, you know, it hinges on your match-winning batters and bowlers and all of that stuff. Like, impact knocks. And Hetmyer does that. He might have slowed down later to end with 64 of 36, but that's a 22-ball half-century when the West Indies are struggling to score quick runs. So I feel like he gives them the much-needed momentum and gets some support from Rovman, Powell and Sherfin Rutherford, the trio of whom, you know, is quite a good middle order, by the way. Like, you take it. In a blink of an eye, those guys are very, very sorted, the West Indies, when it comes to their middle-order batters. And, you know, I feel like the West Indies also, they were quite clever with the ball in the sense that I remember there was one point where Scotland needed like 69 runs in 7 overs and they had like 7 wickets in hand or something like that. And around that point, they reintroduced Jason Holdren to the attack, and you know he's going to bowl those pace-off deliveries at a hard length and he's going to bowl those cutters. Holder initiates the wicket-taking from there, that point on. And then Romario just goes crazy after that. Like, Romario Shepherd ends up with 5 for 20 in 3 overs. And in his third over, he takes 4 wickets, including a hat-trick. The first hat-trick of the 2026 T20 World Cup. He also picks up a spectacular catch. And yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like the West Indies, if they can have a good bowling tournament, perhaps they can be a dark horse. But to that earlier point, their batting probably has to do more of the heavy lifting, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to see how that bowling attack wins them a tournament, right?
Yeah.
Just not just on paper, I think on form, they haven't really had too many like spectacular performances. So it's got to be the batting that does the heavy lifting, as you said. Like, you know, they've got to get runs on the board and then hope that, you know, there's something in the pitch for the medium pace type bowlers or the guys like Jason Holder who, you know, get that hard length. But otherwise, it's going to be tough. I would say compared, and I hope I'm not wrong, because my takes can be, you know, a bit.
It's okay. Estelle, you're recording a show with me. You should feel comfortable and at home.
But, you know, I think compared to previous World Cups, it's difficult to see West Indies kind of, you know, really making like a big impact in this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I had them at best for the Super 8 stage. I don't see them progress to the semifinals. But again, best case, worst case scenarios are ultimately only projections. But you can see a group stage exit as well. You know, it wouldn't shock me if Italy or Nepal end up upsetting the West Indies. And this victory versus Scotland also is, you know, by a margin of 35 runs. And at one moment, I mean, if that partnership between Tom Bruce and Richie Barrington continued for a bit, you'd never know what could happen because those guys were batting really well and they kept feeding spin to them. But I feel like overall, this was a good bowling performance as well. Of course, Romario takes the cake and steals the headlines with the 4-wicket over, a hat-trick and 5 for 20 in 3 overs. But Jason Holder was the most important bowler for me. You know, 1 for 14 in 2 power play overs, ends up with 3 for 30. I thought Mothy was all right because Akil Hussain was going for plenty of runs. And I'm not sure if playing 2 slow left armers is the right call. But Mothy gets 1 for 29 and then the guy that we don't want to name took 1 for 26 as well. So it's interesting to see how they kind of shape up. Jaden Seals could also feature later because he can be someone who can extract some movement with the new ball. But I feel like the biggest pain point for the West Indies moving forward will be their bowling. And I just want to ask you something. Do you think that the West Indies are consciously anchoring at the start? Because they bat really slow in the first 10 overs and waste the power play, right? Do you think it's strategy or were they just not able to connect? It could be both.
I think today it was more that they just couldn't connect, wasn't it? Like, it seemed like there was that intent to score quicker, but it was just not happening for them. So I would say maybe in the long run or, you know, generally, it's something that they look at because, I mean, you've got Shea Hope at the top of the order, right? But today, I feel like they just weren't able to get going.
Yeah, I mean, Shea Hope has kind of flipped a switch and he's turned around his T20 game. Brandon King, to me, is someone who I'm slightly unsold on still, although he's done well in T20s. It's not like he doesn't have a good record. But like, you know, they didn't take Evan Lewis in the squad and I feel like they do bat deep. But the quality of the deep batting can suffer a bit. Like, they don't have the likes of Dre Russ anymore. So this is not as strong a West Indian team that we've seen. I mean, they won the goddamn tournament in India 10 years ago. And Darren Sammy is kind of the glue that holds both those sides together. First, he was captain. Now he's coach. But genuinely, in the first 10 overs of the first innings today, I felt like Scotland had a solid, solid chance. And I mean, were they the best fielding side of the day? My word, did you catch a glimpse of the Brandon McMullen catch? I think that's the best catch thus far. Or, well, there's one good one in Pakistan as well. But I feel like Scotland's fielding was brilliant. And the guy I was most impressed with in their team was Brad Curry. 2 for 23 for him, who went for none for 14 in two power play overs, and then 2 for 9 in the other two overs, which is ridiculous. He was bowling his cutters with very, very high skill, and it was top quality. And, you know, the West Indian batters really struggled to hit him. So I feel like all of these Scotland bowlers are kind of these dibbly dobblers, cutter bowlers. Perhaps that can benefit them moving forward into the tournament. But I feel like it has to be the batting for them which needs to come good, because they can't restrict teams to very low totals. I feel like they can probably restrict teams to par totals at best. And they've got some firepower. But then again, the depth isn't quite there. Once they lose those guys, the house starts to fall quite rapidly.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to, you know, the type of medium paces that they have, they need to click in the early part of the tournament, right? You can't wait until like the pitches. We might see slower pitches as the tournament wears on, but you need to get things right in the beginning if they are going to make it through to the next round, right? And with Bangladesh's withdrawal, it throws this group wide open. They've got an opportunity, despite being like the last team getting in there, they've got an opportunity now, right, to really push for a spot in the Super 8s. And that would be massive for them, right? They're coming from outside. I mean, told a couple of weeks. Was it a couple of weeks even that they were ahead, that they were told they're playing? A week?
I mean, it probably was a week, 10 days. But yeah, I mean, they would have had to cancel their vacation plans and turn up for this World Cup. I like their jersey. It's a nice shade of purple, I suppose. I do rate the Scottish team, and I feel like they are more than capable of pulling off an upset, but this was their best chance, right? Like, they'd probably struggle a bit more versus England. You never know, though. It really depends on what sort of surface they get. If they get one of those pitches where the ball is getting stuck, I feel like they have the perfect attack, Estelle. Like, these guys were born to play on those sort of surfaces.
Yeah, I mean, you saw that in the way they went about things, right? And as we mentioned, the fielding by the USA, like for Scotland, they had control over it, and they were good, right? And that created opportunities for them. I saw this tweet from Melinda Farrell earlier in the day, like, about Scotland. She says, no excuses at the World Cup. But to put that match into perspective, when Scotland found out they were going a couple weeks ago, the team manager was in Nepal with the women's team. The strength and conditioning coach was in Zimbabwe with the under-19s. And their entire staff was at grassroots to elite number 30. I don't know what that means, but like everyone was everywhere, right? So they didn't have any kind of proper prep coming into this tournament. So
yeah, I mean,
I think you can give them a little bit of leeway in that first game. Yeah. That
they had a good warm-up. That's the only practice they've had, right? Like, Brandon McMullen goes a bit insane in that game. And, you know, it's not like they weren't given opportunities. The West Indies weren't perfect in the field like Scotland. They made plenty of errors. In fact, I feel like, you know, there was that Tom Bruce drop at extra cover. There was a Shea Hope run-out chance, which really should have been out, and he just doesn't hit the stumps weirdly. Shamar Joseph also missed a run-out. So the West Indies did look a bit scrappy in the field, but ultimately it just came down to, you know, Scotland not having enough quality in their depth, because for a moment they looked to be in the game, and I was curious. I was asking Jared, can these guys do it? And he said that, yeah, I mean, you know, it's probably kind of done for them. Leask is a guy who can hit like 40 or 15, and Leask went out first ball. He was the middle wicket in Romario's hat-trick, I think. So, yeah, the West Indies will, you know, be happy that they've gotten those 2 points, 35-run victory. Scotland would also be a little encouraged that, you know, they'll back themselves to defeat Italy and, Nepal. But then again, this could be a bit of a shootout group if the West Indies lose a game, right? That's when it gets interesting. And why are we giving England a free chit? Can England not be upset? I think they might be able to achieve that.
You never know, right? But at the way it looks right now, it's difficult to say, right? With the teams that feature in this group. But as you said, like the West Indies, it's not a given that they make it through. So that's where the opportunities come in for the other teams. And like teams like Italy, although we've never seen them before, they've done well, right, in the recent past. I think they beat Ireland recently. So opportunities are there. It's about getting things right on the day, isn't it? Like, because like we saw the USA, it's one or two things that you mess up. Netherlands as well, which I'm sure we will talk about next when we're talking about the Pakistan game. Like one mistake can cost you a game. Mm. And as an associate nation, it's so like cutthroat, right? Like you get this opportunity after a number of years. You make it through that grueling qualifying stage. And then one catch costs you a shot at the Super 8s. I mean, it's sad, but that's how it goes, right?
Yeah, and also I feel like you really need to cash in on the power play if you're scoring or chasing down anything in north of 150, 160 over here. Scotland also falter, right? I know they come back strongly, but at the end of their power play, they were 38 for 3. And at the end of 10 overs, they were 72 for 3. So, you know, if you have half your innings left and you need to score at more than like 10 runs and over, even if you have wickets in hand, if in your associate team, you might tend to struggle. And I think at the 15 over mark, they were 125 for 5. Even then, I gave them half a chance if someone plays a blinder, but that doesn't happen. They're bowled out for 147 in 18.5 overs and they're Romario'd, essentially. Hat-trick Romar hero. And that game's done and dusted. Before we move on to the next one, of course, we have a super chat from Gargi. And she says, palpitations in the first innings, Surya take a bow. I bet that was quite a nervy watch for you, Gargi. I think that's the one thing where Indian and Pakistan fans can kind of unite over here because their teams gave them a proper scare. Pakistan fans even more so. But with India, there's always that inevitability that even if they score a below par total, they could potentially defend it, even if they don't have Bumrah. And I agree with Estelle. I thought to myself that 150 is more than enough over here for India, right? Like, that's what I was thinking in my head. And when Sky goes berserk, right, towards the death overs, I was like, yeah, this is, you know, game, set, match. I don't even care about the second innings anymore. I feel like this is game over. And full credit to Surya Kumar Yadav because he stood up as the captain, 36 ball 50 and then unbeaten 84 of 49, showed a lot of character, played the ball underneath his eye line and then went for his weird, you know, scoopy shots, which I feel like he is the best at, right? Like kind of just maneuvering the ball in a certain direction by kind of shuffling and going for those awkward body positions. He really revels in that sort of role and that is really his USP. And, you know, now we talk about Abhishek Sharma as being the anomaly, but Surya Kumar Yadav was the anomaly before Abhishek Sharma. So this is a guy who was woefully out of form, but he's caught form at the right time. And I mean, he only bolsters India's chances of defending this T20 World Cup title on home soil. So I feel like, you know, Indian fans can breathe a sigh of relief, but they shouldn't be too worried because I feel like worst case scenario for India in this T20 World Cup might be semi-final exit. And that is saying something because obviously anything can happen in a knockout. All right, then we have successfully reviewed two of the three games. We've got Pakistan versus Netherlands to go. But before that, we will be taking a short break. Go nowhere. Stay with us on Combox Live. We will be back after a very, very short break.
Ross Taylor couldn't see at night or when the clouds were in. Eventually, he had to see an eye specialist who would fix his eyesight. In the 2 years before the change, he still averaged more than 50 in international cricket. The top level of batting talent can basically see in the dark. That is who we are talking about in our new book, The Art of Batting. Head over and order your copy today.
Welcome back to Combox Live. You guys are with Behram and Estelle and we are currently reviewing day one of the T20 World Cup. By the way, just to let all of you guys know, you can expect these videos daily, at least for the group stages. We are concurrently running the Combox English and Combox Hindi channels. Right now, they're probably recording the Hindi show. I think it's Deepak and Shayan. And I'll be spearheading the English show and I'll get random guests every day. I think today we have Estelle, tomorrow we'll have Jared. So there's lots and lots of content in store for you guys. Make sure you tell your friends, press that bell icon or something and just continue to be with us throughout the T20 World Cup. All right then, Estelle. The most entertaining T20 World Cup opener since the inaugural edition, I believe, where the West Indies, you know, they scored 200 plus and South Africa chased that down. I think this was like a proper nerve-wracking game for Pakistan fans. And Pakistan harder multiple times in different ways in the same game than they've ever Pakistaned before. It was incredible if you really think about it. And I mean, how do you go from a complete winning position to have almost pulled off a generational bottle job to only then come back, in spectacular fashion and win the game with by 3 wickets and 3 balls to spare? It had everything for the neutral, and it was the best advert for the T20 World Cup from a casual fan's perspective. If you've never watched the sport, if your friends have convinced you, hey, check cricket out, you're probably hooked after that.
I have one question actually to tie into the super chat we got from Gargi about palpitations. Compared India and Pakistan, right? Do Pakistan fans actually ever not have palpitations? Because it seems like every single game, you can never rest until it's actually finished. Because what was that? Like, were they like 98 for 2 or something after 11 overs? And needing 29 off the last 2 overs? And then finishing it with 3 balls to spare?
Yeah, it was quite incredible when you look at the different phases in the game. But it's funny. So I was live for this game on Pro Sports. Like, Saad and I do watch-alongs. And Saad, at the midway point of the second innings, is like, guys, this is your PTSD talking. Pakistan are going to win this game. Don't even worry about it. And then in the end, Saad's like, oh my God, I can't believe they're about to bottle it. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it really will be fascinating if they manage to do this. And then people are probably going to talk about how maybe the forfeiting pressure has gotten to them, and Pakistan, they've come with a better team than, you know, the previous World Cup, which was a terrible campaign for them, and they might lose this or get, you know, knocked out or exit the tournament on day zero of the competition. I say day zero because it was literally the first game of the entire tournament. Day one had not even been half complete, so hence day zero. And, you know, I mean, I hope Mike Hessen has had a few stern words in that dressing room, because, you know, when they needed like 29 of the last 2 overs with 3 wickets in hand, I think everyone would have thought that this is done and dusted. Pakistan have pulled off yet another Pakistan. And for them to come back from that position to win the game with 3 balls to spare also is the most Pakistan thing to have happened today.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, what is a World Cup without this kind of performance from Pakistan, right? Because it had everything. Like, they looked comfortable. Then they looked like they were completely out of it. Like you said, 29 off 2 overs. It was to me, it was unlikely that they would chase that, right? And it should have, they should not have chased it, because if Max O'Dowd had taken that catch, they probably would not have chased it.
That's a very, very and they crucial end up doing moment it with, in the game.
Yeah, 3 balls to spare. Fahim Ashraf has like no problems at all putting away that penalty went over for 24 runs, right? So like, to be honest, like, you know, obviously there's been a lot of conversation about the boycott and, you know, sanctions for Pakistan, whatever. What are we going to do if they're banned from World Cups?
I swear to God. Like, you know, whether they win or lose, Pakistan are perhaps one of the most entertaining teams in the international cricket circuit, right? Like, they are box office. They have you hooked in front of the screen. If you are a fan, you have multiple or never-ending palpitations. If you're a neutral, you are like, take my money. I just want more and more of this, right? And it would get rather bland without Pakistan. I think I tweeted today that Colonel Sanders' recipe has got nothing on this very chaotic blend of flavors that Pakistan cricket provides. And you're right to point out that this game was actually done had Max O'Dowd held on to that Fahim Ashraf catch. Fahim was on 7 at that point. He ends up scoring an unbeaten 29 off 11 and goes away or runs away with the Player of the Match award as well. And another thing that happens at that same moment, not only does Max O'Dowd drop the catch, Estelle, Klein, the bowler who was supposed to bowl the last over, he also gets injured. So now you've got Bastelida bowling that last over, even though, you know, the game was kind of killed off by Fahim Ashraf in the penultimate over. A lot of things go down for the Netherlands over there, and they'd be really kicking themselves. Max O'Dowd will have a tough time sleeping tonight, because this was in the bucket for the Dutch. And really, it is incredible how they've managed to lose this as well after being in the position that they got themselves into afterwards. But just to kind of stress on Pakistan, right? In the power play still, we know that Pakistan aren't known to be a team that maximizes the power play. Chasing 148, they scored 61 for 2. And you're thinking, surely this game is already over. They need run a ball. Babar is batting. Babar loves run a ball, right? Then they are 90 for 2 in 10 overs. They require 58 runs in the next 60 deliveries with 8 wickets in hand. And this went down to the wire with Pakistan needing 29 off 12, right? And then winning it with 3 deliveries to spare. It really was such a chaotic game that whilst you're even watching it, you're trying to process it. You're trying to think back to what was that moment where this flipped? When did this turn around, right? And then just in the blink of an eye, they just, you know, Fahim Ashraf slams those sixes and he wins Pakistan the game. And incredibly, this was his first ever World Cup game. He's never played one before. I mean, Pakistan should consider themselves lucky. Mike Hessen probably would have lost his job had he lost this game. And I do hope that there is some strong critique in that dressing room, because this was a very poor performance by Pakistan. They played extremely trashy cricket and they looked like, you know, I think Fidel tweeted this, that they looked like that drunken uncle who is supposed to completely fall flat on his face. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but then he manages to land his, you know, landing perfectly, something along those lines. It really was a complete Pakistan experience. And yeah, it's that sort of flavor that gets you hooked. It's addictive. And I say this, you know, on behalf of neutrals as well, because it's a completely different perspective when you are watching Pakistan hoping that they will win. They age quicker, Pakistan fans. There's proper research done along this. There's proof in research papers.
You know, it's very interesting that you mentioned, like, a neutral would say, take my money. Because, yeah, like, while this game was going on, the second innings was going on, the majority of the Sri Lankan journalists were at the R. Premadasa covering the practice session and, you know, the press conference before the Sri Lanka's game tomorrow. So I was there as well. I kid you not, I paid subscription to watch the game on my laptop.
Oh, wow. So,
take my money.
Beautiful.
So literally what you said, yeah. And it was entertainment, right? Like at the end of the day, if you're a neutral, you want to be entertained. And that was entertainment. From the Dutch point of view, like, they also bottled it, because I think they lost like 6 or 20 or something in the last 4 overs, something like that. Like, the big collapse at the end, right? Whereas they do have the big hitters who can really maximize and could have got them to 160, 170, 180. But they also bottled that, because I don't know, maybe Pakistan would have chased 180 on that pitch. But, you know, just imagine if they had managed to put up a total like that, that would have been even more pressure. Because remember, this is the team that would knock them out of the beat them in 2022, right?
No, they set things up for Pakistan. They beat South Africa and Pakistan went to the semis because of them. So that day, Roelof van der Merwe also took a spectacular catch and
it,
you know, spelled the end for South Africa. Today he does the same. I have no idea, but I remember him playing for South Africa in the 2019 T20 World Cup semi, right, versus Pakistan. And I love the guy. I feel like he is pretty fit for his age, and also love the celebrations, right? It's just, it's that raw emotion that I love about Roelof, and he really is a champion at heart. But you know what I'll say about this game? This was a very, very good toss to lose for the Netherlands. I am sure that Pakistan, Mike Hessen and Salman Ali Agha were completely fooled by the conditions over here. Salman Ali Agha opts to field first, thinking that there's a lot of grass on the pitch. And there was grass on the pitch, but it was like dormant grass, right? The grassy deck didn't really have an impact. There wasn't much in it for the seamers as such. And they probably thought there was rain around so they can extract some moisture. Doesn't happen. It was a fast outfield. It was a good batting deck in the first innings as well. The pitch does sort of slow down, you know, as the game progresses. And you had to kind of, as a seamer, you had to pepper that good length or short of a length and bold cutters. But Pakistan put themselves at that disadvantage by chasing on a pitch that was progressively getting worse for batting, because they thought that this is a grassy deck and our seamers could really make hay. So I feel like that was a big bonus that Netherlands get from, you know, the start. But really, after where they had gotten themselves in this game, I feel like they'll be really, really upset at losing this one. And did you catch like Rambo's nonsense in between? Like Ramiz Raja is saying, Scott Edwards, what changes will you make for the game? And Scott Edwards is like, this is the first fucking game. Like, well, what do you mean? What changes will I be making? And then he's like, oh, you have a must-win game versus Pakistan. He's like, yeah, it's not really a must-win game. It's our first game. So
Can I give you a reminder, Bahram? You did pick him amongst your top 5 best ever commentators on CricPix. That is all I will say.
Yeah, I mean, I love to burn the house down on CricPix anyway. Rambo is someone I did admire and look up to when I was growing up, but late career Rambo has kind of lost it. And, you know, there is some comedy when him and Amir Sohail and Waqar Yunus are commentating. And I mean, I'm sure they made lots of other mistakes. This is the stuff that
Didn't Baka call Abrarul Haq or something?
Yes, he did. So it's one thing to mispronounce a name. That can happen to anyone, right? Like some people say Matthew Bretzky instead of Breetska. Fine, whatever. You should still get that right, but I'll let it slide. To call a cricketer a singer, a popular one, that really, you know, kind of kills it for me. But yeah, I feel like the toss did have a role to play in the way kind of Pakistan did eventually bottle. But still, man, 90 for 2, you need 58 runs in the last 60 balls. The fact that it got so close was something that only Pakistan could achieve in the first place. And after almost pulling off a generational bottle, to then come out as victors is also a very, very Pakistan thing to do. Fahim Ashraf was undoubtedly player of the match, right? The way he just slams those sixes over mid-wicket and, you know, has an edgy four, slams the ball over point. He goes for, or doesn't go actually, he's unbeaten on 29 of 11. Without him, Pakistan realistically are already out of the tournament because they were already a washout away. Everyone was looking at the weather forecast in Colombo. Then when they were above par after five overs, people were like, all right, it's fine if it rains. And I kid you not, Estelle, there was a time where if it rained, Netherlands would have won. Because that's how Pakistan, you know, really, they kind of fell off a cliff. So, yeah, great advert. Very high quality entertainment, or low quality, high entertainment, whatever way you want to put it. And yeah, I mean, if you look at the Netherlands, I feel like there were some mistakes that Scott Edwards made. For instance, I felt like Roloff really should have been bowled out. You're talking about a slow left armer versus Pakistan. They always click. Rangana Herath has taken 25% of his test wickets versus Pakistan, for instance, right? Roloff has 1 for 13 in 3 overs and a spectacular catch. So he wasn't bowled out. That was a mistake. And then Paul van Meekeren really, you know, must be feeling the heat because he was probably one of the best players on show. 2 for 20 in his 4 overs and that double wicket maiden. And he was bowling hard length cutters. That was kind of his ploy. Awful haircut. God-awful haircut. I don't know what the hell he's doing with his hair. But you'd probably feel for those two guys and Max O'Dowd. Because O'Dowd obviously is the person who... like he'll be feeling it the most, and Roloff and Paul van Meekeren didn't really put a foot wrong.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to, at the end of the day, it was one catch, right? It was that one catch. Like nothing else would have mattered if he had taken that catch, because you don't see, what was it, 23 of 11, right?
Yeah.
And Ashraf back in the heart, you've got Shaheen, and who would have been their number 11? Was it Abrar?
A Salman or Abrar, neither of them know really how to bat.
Yeah. So pretty much game for Netherlands, right? So I think that would be the biggest issue. And Logan Van Beek, he went for plenty. A lot of runs.
Yeah,
He does produce a lot of those overs, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, look, he can be clutch, as we know from the time when the Netherlands knocked out the West Indies, right? He was the guy who smashed the ball in the Super Over. And I feel like he provides good three-dimensional utility. But I feel like the Netherlands' death bowling was not, you know, really great. Losing Klein also hurt them because Bastalida had to bowl the last over. But it's that penultimate over where Fahim gets dropped by Max O'Dowd. There are 2 sixes over mid-wicket, 1 muscled 6 over long off, and then that edgy boundary for 4 as well. And he's the difference between both teams at the end. It was a no-brainer to give him, you know, player of the match. But Pakistan, like, they started off well, right? Like, as I said, what, 61 for 2 in the power play? Syme does well, quickfire 24. Farhan also gets 47 of 31. And then Babar Azam, who I don't know why they trust him to be the middle-over spin negotiator, he scores 15 of 18. Silver duck for Usman Khan. Shadab and Nawaz also play crippling innings. But what is it with Babar, man? Like, is this it? Do you think that he is finally at the end of the road in T20s? Because Jared and I did an entire footmarks on this, and Jared said that perhaps they're looking at him as a fail-safe batter who on the adverse day can just take them home. Wasn't today the day that Babar had to be the fail-safe batter? Instead, he went for a big shot when he had to go for singles.
See, I think now things have just got into his head, right? Because he's not playing his game. He's trying to play what people expect him to play. So he in a game where he could have played his natural game and got Pakistan home, he decides, no, I want to show that I can play the big shots too. It's not necessary, right? Like I think right now it's gotten into his head, right? It's the criticism has got to him.
Yeah, and I mean, today was his kind of run chase. Hey, Babar, we need run a ball. We don't care about net run rate. We care about the 2 points today. So go ahead and just finish the game. You don't need to accelerate. You just need to keep the scoreboard ticking. And he can't manage that. So it might have gotten to his head. And he is in a weird situation right now because I think even he knows that it's now or never for him in the T20 team, right? And there are a lot of people who want him out of the playing 11. They want Fakhar or Nafe to be in his place. And there is some solid, you know, rationale for that. I think that he's going to get an extended rope at number four, at least in the group stages, and then we'll see what happens. But other guys also bottle it. I mean, Babar Azam's knock is not as bad, perhaps, as Shadab and Nawaz, who really just cannot connect, right? They can't even touch the ball properly. And Usman Khan, all right, it's a silver duck, whatever. But I feel like the turning point for me was the Paul Van Meekeren over where he bowls a double wicket maiden. At that point, you're thinking, all right, is it possible that Pakistan, you know, can crumble from here? And they showed us exactly that if not for the drop catch by Max O'Dowd and Fahim Ashraf's explosive brilliance, that's exactly what would have happened. And I mean, some food for thought, some room for introspection for Pakistan. The way I look at it is that the USA game that they lost in 2024, they have won in 2026. And that's how Pakistan should look at it.
Yeah, at the end of the day, like even if you look at someone like the West Indies, right? They've got the 2 points that they need. For Pakistan, stakes are high because, you know, you did mention like they may have lost to India anyway. But that's still an opportunity to get points on the board, right? Whereas if they do end up boycotting it, then it's guaranteed 2 points they're not getting. And we don't know what kind of impact that will have on their net run rate as well, right? But at the end of the day, they have to think about it as, look, we've got the 2 points. We've got the 2 points now. How do we go about things in the next couple of games? Because it's not going to count for anything that they've beaten Australia 3-0 coming into this tournament if they can't get over the line against like the associate nations that they're facing, right?
Yeah, and it is completely on brand with Pakistan cricket. Whatever Australian team you beat, it's always big when you sweep them 3-0, right? Whoever is playing for Australia. And that was their prep. It seemed like they had finally turned a corner because the batting was coming through as well. It's the batting that kind of gave them a scare again once again today. Because if you think about it, they came back strongly with the ball. The Netherlands were going very good. They were 50 for 2 after the power play, 79 for 3 in 10 overs. At that point, you're thinking, all right, double up or score 90-odd runs. Get to 170 and I feel like we have a solid chance of winning it because it's Pakistan. But then they, you know, Pakistan put the brakes on them. In 15 overs, they're 123 for 4, so still going all right. But then they bowled out for 147 in 19.5 overs. And I feel like, you know, there was one mistake that Salman Ali Aga makes. Saim Ayub comes and bowls it over in the death. Yeah. He picks up 2 wickets and concedes 7 runs. And when you're looking at that pitch play out where the ball is slightly getting stuck and progressively the pitch is getting slow, you're thinking to yourself, why is Salman not trying Saim? He's got the carom ball. Netherlands is stacked with right-handed batters. Surely you try him when Nawaz is going for plenty. And he does eventually do that. But I think he bowls 1/2 less. Like, he should have bowled 2 or 3 Saim Ayub. And I feel like you utilize the resource when you've got one.
Yeah, I was also surprised that he came on to bowl pretty late in the innings, didn't he?
Yeah. Very late in the death overs, right?
And he's the type of bowler who seems to pick up wickets very often, doesn't he? So
he
it was
incisive.
A bit strange to see. Yeah, it was strange to see him not being utilized more. As you said, I think the SSA pitch is flatter than something you might see at the R. Premadasa. But you were seeing signs that it was slowing down a bit, right? So, and, you know, when you know you've got a player who can make those kind of breakthroughs for you, why are you saving him for later in the innings?
I was worried he wouldn't even give him an over, so I was pleasantly surprised that he did. And if Saim doesn't take those 2 wickets and go for 7 runs in that over, you never know, the Netherlands might get more than 147. But Pakistan actually have a very hot and cold day in the field. I don't know how much of this game you caught, Estelle, but there was this one catch, a parried catch that Babar Azam, you know, kind of flips back
catch.
And gives it to Shaheen and they complete that catch. I thought that was a spectacular effort. Babar takes another catch in the deep. Bad batting day, but good fielding day. And, you know, Salman takes a couple of catches as well. But then there's misfields by Salman Mirza. There was an overthrow. Shadab drops a very simple, straightforward cotton bowled opportunity when Scotty Edwards is, what, on 25 or something. So I feel like Pakistan have been clinical in the field recently. In this game, you don't really know where to place them because Netherlands were the better fielding side. Barring the drop catch by Max O'Dowd, the Netherlands were brilliant, right? Like, spectacular. So there are areas where Pakistan can improve. Usman Khan's keeping was good. That's a plus because he's a makeshift sort of serviceable keeper, right? I feel that because they've survived this scare, perhaps that can battle harden them and perhaps prep them better for the other two games versus the associates, because whether or not the India game happens, they've got to beat the other two associate nations if they want to progress to the Super 8 stage. And the bowling did well ultimately. The only poor bowlers were Shaheen, who goes for 1 for 28 in his 3 overs, and Nawaz, consistently short and wide. He was poor. 2 for 38 for him. But if you look at everyone else, I think Salman Mirza, right call to play him. He picks up 3 for 24. And then you've got Abrar, who's been in really good form. 2 for 23 for him. And we talked about the Syme over as well. So overall, I feel like, yes, they stuttered big time and they would have made headlines had they lost this. They've made headlines by not losing this as well. But there are some positive signs that they can carry through. If they can just figure out how to not completely crash when they are chasing something and the pitch slows down, perhaps they can be competitive.
Yeah, the one big, I think, not big, well, it is an advantage that they're going to be playing all their games in Sri Lanka, right? In that it's conditions that they can get accustomed to. And they don't have to travel a lot. So that is one thing. Just one point about the Babar catch, actually, right? I don't know how much you could see on the broadcast. I was at the grounds. He made a huge amount of ground, right?
Really?
He made a huge amount of ground to get there. He wasn't at, like, was it mid-off? He wasn't at straight mid-off. He was quite wide. So when the ball went up, he had to make a huge amount of ground. So it was actually, I think, I don't know what, like you saw on the broadcast, but it was a very, very good catch because of the amount of ground he made. And, you know, Shaheen as well, right? The awareness to actually make it there by the time he threw the ball back in. So that was, I thought, like, first game of the tournament, pretty special effort.
Yeah, I mean, you don't expect that sort of stuff from Pakistan. I know they make some errors in the field, but that
Spectacular and horrendous, right?
Yes, it's just those two ends of the spectrum. You don't expect middling. The results end up being middling because they're either spectacular or absolutely useless. But yeah, I do agree that catch really turns things around for Babar, and at least that'll give him some confidence because he's not doing much with the bat. Also, I felt Shadab Khan, poor day with the bat, but unlucky with the ball. There was this one boundary which goes because there's a misfield. There's this one catching opportunity where the ball falls in no man's land. He ends up with none for 26, where I feel like he actually bowls a lot better than that. And I like the way he's kind of bowling these days after his rehab. So I feel a lot hinges on Shadab Khan if Pakistan are going to have a good campaign, because he's been the MVP in some of the better tournaments that they've enjoyed, like the 2021 and 2022 campaigns. He's a senior player as well. He's their best fielder. I feel if Shadab Khan ends up having a good T20 World Cup, perhaps Pakistan can make a semi-final run, because if they make it to the Super 8s, you know, it's a favorable Super 8 group, provided Sri Lanka, New Zealand and England make it there, because the three best teams, according to me, in this tournament are Australia, South Africa and India, who are probably going to be pitted against each other. So in that regard, there is a world in which Pakistan could make a run. But I mean, based on what we saw today, surely no one can label them contenders. They cannot be contenders after that performance.
I just think, like, they've got to find a way to bat better, right? Like, they've got to find, like, yeah, Shadab is important, but they've got to put runs on the board. If not, they're going to struggle in this tournament.
Yeah, big time. And I feel like we might have another couple of games over here with the associate nations, Pakistan playing them. And, you know, you never know. Pakistan could lose one of them. You could get a repeat telecast of this game, or perhaps Pakistan are dominant. That's the beauty of Pakistan cricket. You never know what to expect. Only a fool would make bold predictions with respect to what they can do, because every time they have won things, they look completely down and out in those particular campaigns as well. Like, that's been the theme, right? In the Champions Trophy that they win, they are obliterated by India in the first game. They're also the 8th-ranked team. In the 1992 ODI World Cup, they're almost gone and they're relying on other results and rain and stuff like that, and it all works out. And even in the 2019-20 World Cup, I mean, they were in a now or win or get knocked out sort of position. They were backed into a corner, and I'm not sure if this team has it in them to kind of pull off something spectacular, but I just hope that they can continue to entertain, because that's what we love about Pakistan cricket. All right then. Finished with all three reviews. Here is a super chat by Suna Panna. Thank you so much, Suna, for the generous super chat. She or he, I'm sorry, I'm not sure what gender you are, says that, great videos. Good to see Estelle again. I know, Estelle, you've got a fan base. I'm sure you're aware. And people get super excited when you turn up for these videos. So you should do this more.
Okay.
I kind of tried to sell it to her, guys, but she's unavailable tomorrow. I'll be on with Jared on Combox Live.
Yeah, because I'll be at the grounds and there's nowhere to record. Yeah.
Where can we listen to your commentary?
No, I won't be on commentary.
Oh.
But I'll be just covering the game, yeah.
Fair enough. Well, do pick up on some fun stories so that whenever you are here with us next, you can share them with us. And for those of you who interacted with us in the comment section, thank you very much for your interactions. And thank you for the super chats as well. Continue to watch Combox live videos. We're on the Hindi channel as well, and this is Combox English. We're going to do daily shows and stuff, and it's going to be a power-packed and fun month for all of us because it's the T20 World Cup and it's an absolute festival. So take care, guys. Have fun, and we'll see you tomorrow. All right, then. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Rakshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv.
If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.